At this point, we badly need something to celebrate. And in the way of Late Night Live, we've gone to the world of nature. Feathers, to be precise. Useful, of course, and beautiful, but also mysterious. For hundreds of years, scientists have been trying to harness their genius. The task most recently of Professor David Lentink, an aerospace engineer and biologist based at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. David, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thanks so much.
David, why are feathers worth hundreds of years of study?
Well, they are truly magical. Everyone has picked up a feather and touched it. And what's, for example, very special about a feather is that it's both very stiff and extremely soft at the edges. And I think that's also what makes it so pleasant to touch. And this quality we don't have in engineered materials. So if you look at it through the lens of engineering, it's marvelous that you can have a material and a structure that's both soft and stiff at the same time. And what's even more remarkable is that feathers really have myriad types of functions. So it's not a single thing they do. They do a lot of things at the same time.
Well, they help little animals fly. That surely is the first piece of magic.
Yes. So if you think about all these birds that are floating, you know, in the air, thanks to all these feathers that are incredibly lightweight, and yet they can bear the complete aerodynamic load, right? So these wings of these birds, they generate lift to support the weight, so that the birds can fly. But in the end, it's distributed over all these feathers. So indeed, it's the feathers that streamline a bird. And a bird has thousands, 10,000s of feathers, and they all work together at the same time. And that's another miracle if you think about it, because how do you stay in control of all these feathers, and how do you make sure that together they give you the right shape to fly? Well, that's one of the other reasons that I'm really amazed by them.
And you've worked out some way of studying birds in flight in boxes. Now, tell us how this works.
One of the things I try to understand is how much lift force a bird generates to fly, and how it generates this lift force when the wing is beating down versus upwards. Sort of a recovery stroke, because the wing is beating up, down, up, down, up, down during flight. And whereas in aircraft, what we do is, when we design an aircraft, is we make a model aircraft and we place it in the wind tunnel and we mount it on a balance system so we can directly measure the forces that this model generates. And then we know, this is how an airplane flies and this is how much lift it can generate. But you can't do that with a bird. But then the question is, how do you measure these forces? And that's where I actually solved this problem by developing a large flying chamber. And the bird flies in the chamber and from perch to perch. And then we measure on the walls the pressure distribution that it generates. So when a bird flies, there's a higher pressure underneath the bird and there's a lower pressure above the bird that sucks it up. And because when it flies in a large chamber, this suction force will actually suck on the ceiling, and this pressure force at the bottom will actually push at the bottom. And then if you put a scale, you know, under this box, so to say, you can actually measure the force and how it changes in time. And one of the special things is that I've proven mathematically that it's correct using the first principle. So based on this, we can actually now see how the force that the bird generates to fly changes in time. And it turns out that most birds actually generate most of the force during the downstroke and little force during the upstroke. But the really special thing that we discovered using this magical measurement box, so to say, is that when birds take off, they beat their wings downwards, and this generates a very large drag force. But because the wing is beating downward, this drag force, which opposes this motion, points upward. So basically, they are supporting their body weight with 50% drag and 50% lift. And this is truly something incredible, because in aircraft or helicopters, drag is a nuisance. But my graduate student, Diana Chin, who actually built this box and discovered this, She says, for birds, drag is not a drag. They basically can harness drag to take off into the air because they can make it orient upward, opposing gravity. And yeah, that's a real discovery and came as a huge surprise.
But can you imagine some way that this could be used for flight?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, I've worked on robots that can land on a branch like a bird. And I also want to work on robots that can take off from a branch like a bird. And to be able to do that well, if you want to fly with a robot, for example, in a tree, then this is super useful because then you need to generate a lot of force all at once because you have to have sort of a burst takeoff. And then it's super useful to be able to use this drag. That's an example. And I'm quite sure that there are even more examples, but we're just starting to think about it because we just discovered this.
Do only birds have feathers?
It's really specific to birds indeed. So if you look at feathers, they are really marvelous structures. They're a little bit like our nails and the scales on some reptiles, but they're really different too. So they're made out of feather keratin, which is a different molecule. And then if you look at their branching pattern, that's really unique. And that's what makes a feather so special, that you start off with this stiff rachis in the middle. And that's really where the stiffness is coming from. And then there are barbs branching off, right? And that sort of like gives you the feather shape. But then the barbs are connected with barbules that lock them together with sort of a zipping mechanism like Velcro, but then more sophisticated. And this is really, really special. So if you look at the different scales of a feather, you know, if you start with a wing, that can be up to a meter scale. And then if you go to the rachis, right, that's that middle shaft, and then the branching off barbs and then the barbules. But then also if you look at the tiniest hooks, you know, then you get to scales that are about 10 million times smaller, right? And then if you go down to the smallest scales, we're talking about a billion times smaller. So the smallest molecule, functional molecule structures in a feather, you know, they're in the order of a nanometer. So that's a billionth of a meter. And in engineering, you just don't find any structures that are so sophisticated over all those scale levels. And then if you look in biology, well, you know, a feather is in essence sort of, once it's created, a dead structure. And it's really special if you think about it, that like such a sophisticated structure, you know, is programmed. It's really built by the cells and it's sort of like, well, 3D printed, but then more advanced in the feather molecule. And then you end up with such an amazing structure. So you won't find it elsewhere in nature, but also you won't find it anywhere in engineering. We really cannot produce such an intricate structure using manufacturing techniques, also not 3D printing.
And it takes color so vividly. Why is that?
Well, it's in two different ways. There's like the more standard coloring that we used to based on pigment, but then there are also optical crystals, and that's where you get the nice shimmering blues and shimmering sort of black variations that everyone has seen, or like other colors that are really spectral and spectacular. And it's really this combination, and it's really based on structures at a micro and nano scale in the feather that gives this coloration. So really at the smallest scales in the feather, there's all these structures that also help give it color.
And
it's very adaptive.
Sorry, they are the most colorful things in nature, aren't they?
Well, I would say amongst the most colorful ones. Like I also have to think about a monarch butterfly or something.
Oh, yes, of
but
course.
But that's the beauty of nature, that like coloration is amazing. But in birds, I think it's spectacular. It has to do also with the scale of the bird, right? So if you see a bird fly by, its motion, its wings are moving, and then you see these feathers, like they're brilliant. And especially during the sexual display, you know, like when they're courting, you know, like it's amazing what birds will do with their colors and feathers to impress partners.
Do you go out and hide in marshes with binoculars and look at birds? Is that part of your study as well?
Well, it's a great question. So that's the kind of, I have to be very honest here. I am sort of a birder, but I would say some of my colleagues know even a lot more about different types of birds and their special behaviors. But what my specialism is really the motion of birds. So how do they move? So when I take up my binoculars, and I do have them, I have a special button on it to stop the motion, the shaking of my hands, so I can actually track them in flight and see what maneuvers they make. And that's really the thing that makes me most excited. There are about 10,000 species of birds, and you know, I don't know them all, but I know there are twitchers out there that know like most of them.
And are determined to see them all. Yeah, and determined to see them all before they die.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I collaborate with twitchers, like, because of their knowledge. Yeah, no, but it's amazing.
That's a great line, David. That's a great line. Yeah. I collaborate with twitchers. Let it be remembered. Hey, what is the next technological breakthrough that birds might give us?
So one thing that I discovered with my team in 2020 is that I talked about Velcro, right? So that's something we know. Well, the thing is that once Velcro is stuck, it costs a lot of effort to get it unstuck. What we discovered is that not only do birds have this locking mechanism within one feather so that it sticks together, that you have this nice shape. Actually, when two flight feathers move over each other and they separate too far, so, you know, when there's a gap, an aerodynamic gap that's about to occur, then they all of a sudden lock together. It was really surprising to us. And when we looked into the mechanism, it turns out that there's tiny microscopic hooks, thousands, that automatically lock together before the feathers separate from each other, so that when the wing is fully stretched, it forms this nice and continuous surface. Well, if that would be like Velcro, then how on earth would a bird be able to then tuck its feathers back in, right? Because if it's all stuck, that would be really nasty. And it turns out it doesn't stick the way back in. Actually, it's one-way Velcro. So if they slide too far apart, they lock together like Velcro, but you can easily slide them back. And we have nothing like that in engineering. And that's a discovery we made. And we're now working on research to actually develop something like that in engineering too, because it could have lots of uses. It would be actually wonderful to have something that sticks one way and then fastens. And then if you move it the other way, it automatically unlocks.
David, thank you so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I've been speaking to Professor David Lentink of Groningen University in the Netherlands about the mysterious properties of feathers.